Hello, wonderful person. This is Anton, and today I wanted to discuss a somewhat intriguing topic in regards to, well, this. Something that often shows up as sensationalist headlines involving some kind of an alien, or specifically an alien skull, discovered in some cave from some ancient civilization, that very often ends in the conclusion that aliens used to exist on the planet and then they basically left. But the thing is, the actual scientific reality in this case is somewhat intriguing and technically way more fascinating than any of these alien stories.
Anton has given us a lot to unpack here. Let's start with the wonderful person comment. I am not, and have never been, a wonderful person. He's correct, however, that a lot of people do believe aliens were involved in the elongated skulls. And that can be hard for a lot of people to accept, myself included. But this doesn't change what we do know about these skulls, and it doesn't change what we don't know about these skulls, and it doesn't change what we know we don't know about these skulls, which sounds confusing, but if you do any real investigation into these things, confusion's about the number one thing you're going to walk away with. So let's look at what Anton had to say about these elongated skulls and the practice of artificial cranial deformation. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking.
And so, in this video, we're going to be discussing the idea behind body modifications, and specifically focusing on these cranial modifications, whose initial discovery by the Western civilization at first actually shocked a lot of people.
Anton, I like your channel a lot, but I have to say that I don't like the way that you conflated all the different forms of body modification together, because the severity is pretty high. I mean, if I took my kid to get their ears pierced, nobody's going to complain. But if I take them to get castrated, they might look at me a little bit different, right? So the cranial deformation falls somewhere in between in my mind, and I think in most people's minds. So I do feel like it's a little bit lazy to just kind of throw them all into one basket. Now, there is no question that many believe that several of these elongated skulls were natural, not artificially modified, and that those were alien or perhaps another species of hominid or something similar. And understandably, the idea that they were extraterrestrial is considered to be out there. But the fact is, the ubiquity of the practice of cranial deformation and the associated claims of heightened intellect need to be considered in a fair but skeptical light when looking into these skulls. Otherwise, why bother?
Here we're talking about the practice of intentionally deforming the shape of the human skull. And when archaeologists find these elongated conical skulls, in many cases, it basically results in these hyped-up, sensationalist headlines.
It's usually not archaeologists that find these sorts of things. Traditionally, in most places, it has been traders and explorers. And Paracas is an exception there, but generally speaking, that's a problem because traders trade these things. They sell them. You don't end up with good records. You end up with profit. And then the coolest samples end up on the shelves. We can assume selection bias is at work here. So when Anton just says, you know, these could all be made through the process of artificial cranial deformation, as we will see, that's not exactly accurate. But in addition to that, that's ignoring selection bias, which we know has been raging for at least 200 years. For example, the Chinook chief Concomly was a friend to the white explorers in the Pacific Northwest, having met Lewis and Clark and been favorably mentioned in their memoirs. He wasn't dead 3 whole years before his skull was stolen by a prominent European doctor, one Dr. Meredith Gairdner of the Hudson Bay Company. And this is not an isolated example. In fact, Lewis and Clark reported seeing 3,000 above-ground graves in one place in Washington State, and each of these would have had a modified skull, according to their records. All of these were looted and sold over the years, and the cover-up is so immense that someone who does amazing research like Anton here often misses it. Now, I've covered this before, but Anton's going to give us a great case study of the stuff being swept under the rug. And it'll be very funny to notice how the places he fails to mention are the same places that I've been telling you the cover-up is actively hiding.
Look, everyone, it must be extraterrestrials.
Very droll, Anton, but I have to point out you did just set up your audience. I mean, now anything except for artificial cranial deformation is going to be put into tinfoil hat nuttery land. And let's be clear, there is a huge distinction between the idea of these skulls emulating an alien or another species of hominid.
But in this video, we're going to be discussing some of the modern evidence we have for all of this, because as we actually examine the evidence, it'll become pretty clear that this is not just some kind of an ancient outlier, but seems to be an incredibly widespread activity present on almost every continent on the planet, with Antarctica being the obvious exception. In other words, this apparently happened in many different cultures out there, and for reasons that seem to be entirely different, and sometimes not entirely understood.
Well, it is nice to see Anton pointing out that you do see this practiced almost everywhere on the planet. There is one big problem in his reporting here. In most places, we do have some idea as to why they did it. The people that practiced artificial cranial modification, which they did to the skulls of their children, they believe that this gave them increased intellect or something similar. This is extremely well documented, but as we shall see, that doesn't mean it's easy to find. The fact is, these elongated skulls are one of the most hidden things I have ever come across when I look into ancient history. The information is being erased in real time. The knowledge that was once held by the masses has become so obscure, even doing solid research won't help unless you look outside the confines of what you are told is the norm. I know it sounds odd, but take this skull, for example, from the famous Chief Khankamli. He was once as well known in the Western world as Sacagawea. Now he's obscure, unknown, and his claim to fame, the elongated skull, is all but removed from even the artistic representations of the man. By all accounts, Khankamli was extremely wise, very shrewd, a great businessman, a great orator, a good friend, and a good leader. He attributed his increased intellectual capacity to his modified cranium.
But here, I guess, let's start with the most famous example, and the one that usually creates the most sensationalist headlines. Let's start with the Paracas culture that used to exist in Peru approximately 2,000 to 3,000 years ago. And it's widely regarded as one of the earliest complex societies in South America, and while their exceptional textiles were also kind of connected with their burial rituals, or technically their mummies. Because it turns out that part of the culture also involved placing deceased individuals in a kind of a seated position and wrapping them in many layers of these textiles to basically create a kind of a mummy.
Of course he starts in Peru, that's where all the cool ones are from, just ask Brian Forrester. But there is so much that he's gonna miss, and that's because the Paracas skulls have been the subject of mishandling and corruption since they were discovered back in 1927. Right away, the archaeologist in charge of the find, Julio C. Tello, gave different accounts. In one instance, he claimed that 451 of those bundles Anton just showed us were found. In another instance, he claimed that it was only 429. Of course, they claimed this was just a clerical error, and while I might accept this if this was an isolated incident, it certainly is not. First of all, of those two numbers, which one do you think it was that actually was? Was there 429 bundles or 451? Well, which one would facilitate stealing? That's the number that it is. There was 429 bundles officially, buddy. Those other 22 bundles? Shh, never existed. And so when those 429 bundles were moved from the caves to a museum, they opened some of those right there in the field and inspected them. Now, the records are incomplete. Some of the bundles have detailed accounting to the contents. Others have only archival records that really do little to explain what was found. A few years later, during the Great Depression, money mummy for storage and preservation was kind of slim, so Nelson Rockefeller, well, he heard about these and went down to Peru and purchased four or five, records are incomplete, bundles for $3,000. Now, this was a financial windfall for Tello, who was still in charge of those mummies, and the bundles given to Rockefeller, well, those were displayed at the Met and at the National History Museum in New York City. These bundles were opened and publicly displayed in some of the biggest museums in the world. And there's no photographs, there's no detailed records, and Nelson Rockefeller was said to have repatriated those skulls, but the Peruvian government's not sure which ones those are. They just, I don't know, throw them back in the box. So the four or five that were cherry-picked by the man, well, you know, just shuffle those in with the rest. Nothing to see here. In 1949, a bundle was opened and witnessed by hundreds of people. It was filmed and covered by multiple media outlets, including Newsweek and Time. However, the coverage of this today is scant, with the Time article not even mentioning the deformed cranium. To really show you just how bad this mishandling has been, in 1979, 54 bundles were said to have been opened by the museum director. He recorded the contents of six. He didn't even record the other bundles that he opened, he just put them back on the shelf. And the reason that this is important is because of that debate around the more extreme skulls. Brian Forrester is the most prominent in this field, but there are many out there pointing out that the cranial capacity is larger, the point where the spine meets the skull is different, the natural suture lines are often not present in these examples, etc., etc. Now, the debate is raging, and to me, there's no point injecting myself into that because we lack the data. It's incomplete. We know the best samples, the stuff that a guy like Nelson Rockefeller would choose, we don't get to see. And this is not the only example of this, but it is really bad in Paracas. I mean, if you assume that some of those skulls were so outlandish as to be clearly not human, which ones do you think Rockefeller took? Why do you think the director opened so many bundles and only recorded six? Why was the public opening filmed so ill-covered? And where are the images today? The fact of the matter is, this cover-up is just as ubiquitous as the practice of cranial modification itself. We see it around the world. Now, why they started modifying craniums may well have been the emulation of a different species of hominid. And I know that's not as fun as aliens and stuff, but it is a lot more likely. And the fact of the matter is, we know that the best skulls been cherry-picked away. If there was another species of hominid in there, it would have been cherry-picked away and hidden somewhere, not recorded properly, in somebody's private collection or repatriated, and then, oh, we just lost it. What do you think is up with those repatriated skulls Rockefeller chose, for example, honestly?
Obviously, today we have no idea why exactly this was done, but the point is that this was a really complex culture. And in their culture, they also practiced what's known as the cranial deformation, with the examples of the skulls from this culture visible right here. And well, here this was done in childhood, when the child's head was bound in order to elongate it, and in order to produce various shapes.
Now, this is not entirely true. A symbolic rebirth was the reason they used multiple layers. It was supposed to be like a womb kind of thing. Again, we do know a lot more about this than Anton seems to be letting on. But again, I can't fault the guy for not finding a lot of what he's looking for. This is a really difficult topic to research because so much of it has been deliberately hidden from us. And I say that with utter confidence, deliberately hidden from us.
And well, today for this particular culture, it's actually believed to be possibly some kind of a status symbol, or maybe done for somewhat aesthetic reasons to make the skull appear more beautiful.
In my opinion, this is why we need to take a larger picture approach to this sort of thing and not just isolate individual cultures. Like, a place like Paracas was almost certainly in contact with other regions that practiced artificial cranial modification, and some of their writings and traditions can inform us as to what was going on in Peru. Just take a look at this map. This is from a 1938 book, Deformaciones Intenciones de Cuerpo Humano de Carácter Étnico. And that is perfect pronunciation in every single video so far. Thank you very much. And this is a Spanish work, if you couldn't tell, covering the practice of artificial cranial deformation. But in 2020, this map was published in a paper titled Earliest Known Intentionally Deformed Human Cranium from Asia. You will notice the more modern map is missing many locations and others are incredibly diminished. Hawaii, the inland United States, and a lot of other places have been removed from that more modern map. Now, perhaps this is an error, but then I have to ask why it is that I can find record of the island of Niue practicing cranial modifications, including accounts of a skull that's 96% as wide as it is tall, but when I Google it, the AI will tell me there was never any cranial modification performed on Niue. The fact is, out of every topic I've ever covered on my channel, nothing has been as diligently covered up as the elongated skulls. There's nothing that I've ever said, this is a cover-up, this isn't just some mistakes. The elongated skulls, one or two mistakes is one thing, but if you're skeptical of the cover-up, eventually that just falls to pieces under the weight of evidence to the contrary.
And well, back in 2014, naturally, this produced a lot of hype once again. mostly because some of the preliminary DNA tests suggested some kind of an unknown mutation. But a much more recent study clarified all of this, with the results eventually showing us some very interesting genetic markers, including connections to Europe and even the Middle East, and basically not a purely Native American DNA, implying some kind of an additional migration that must have happened around this time.
Now, I like Anton for this reason here. He just spits things out a lot of the times. He doesn't consider the implications as much as like a lot of the debunkers do. In this case, it's basically what I was saying earlier about another species of hominid and about the cultures being in contact. I mean, look at this map again. Now compare it to the kelp highway hypothesis map. I mean, just look at the map and think seafarer, and all of a sudden the distribution makes a lot of sense, right? Except you have to accept that there was contact between the old world and the new, otherwise this all falls apart. And this is why we have such pushback today. In my opinion, it's probably why the information keeps disappearing. But the fact is, the DNA in the Paracas region lines up with that weird Asiatic pottery that we see in South America. The depictions of bearded people, turban-wearing people, etc. It seems like Paracas was a major hub. DNA shows this, as does the geoglyph nearby, known as the Candelabra of the Andes. A massive earthwork, it's visible 12 miles out to sea. It's a great way to inform other seafarers, hey, this is the place to land. I mean, honestly, it seems quite obvious to me that there was a degree of contact before Columbus all across the ancient world.
Although a much more likely explanation suggests that there must have been some kind of a DNA degradation or even contamination, which is obviously quite common for skulls that are 2,000 years old.
Now, while this can happen, it's pretty rare for DNA to degenerate into looking like something else, and the number of samples there would kind of preclude such a thing from happening. One or two samples is one thing, 20 or 30 is another. But the fact of the matter is, again, we end up in this situation where people have to cling to these old beliefs. You can't have this pre-Columbian contact. So the skulls are mundane, the skulls are mundane, the skulls are mundane. Some mantra in order to just maintain that worldview.
But, as I mentioned, what's actually remarkable is that, first of all, this is obviously not the only culture to practice this. As a matter of fact, these skulls, or similar skulls, have been discovered pretty much everywhere. And one of the oldest collections is approximately 13,000 years old.
The only strange thing is how hard you have to dig in order to find records of this. I mean, it can really, really become an insurmountable task unless you, like, put your feet in a bookstore or something. And the rule of thumb generally being the stranger is the skull, the harder it is to find today. Like those four or five or however many that Rockefeller got. And while many cultures claim that they don't even want drawings of these skulls shown to the public, Peru has no such compulsions, so how Rockefeller skulls ended up getting lost is beyond me. Just like that 96% as wide as it is tall skull from Nui, where is it? Who knows? But you ain't gonna find it. Not even a photograph. And it becomes difficult to tell whether or not this was entirely artificial or some of it was natural. It becomes impossible to determine how extreme these artificial modifications could go. And while many may see just a few missing samples, the fact is these were selected and then removed from the collections they originally belonged to. I mean, assuming a guy like Rockefeller just grabbed four or five bundles sight unseen is absurd, especially considering that it was already on the record that at least one of those bundles was publicly opened and, to the embarrassment of that Tello guy, it was full of beans, not a body, so I'm sure Rockefeller did due diligence. And that makes sense, because as I mentioned, in the Pacific Northwest, there were thousands of these skulls, and they were all long gone by the time Rockefeller was born. And now some of them have been repatriated, but most are silently just languishing in private collections somewhere, sitting on a dusty shelf that few could ever even see. So by the time Rockefeller knew about the skulls in Peru, all the other ones had been picked over, but not Paracas. So off he went. And there's one more thing to keep in mind as well. Because of the way that these skulls were treated, there are some tribes that just like to not talk about it anymore. I mean, you steal our artifacts, then you repatriate them. Well, who's not to say your kids ain't going to come and steal them again? So a lot of the tribes just kind of downplay the whole thing as well. So like, you end up with multiple different reasons for people to not tell the truth. And at the end of the day, we certainly are not getting the full truth.
And surprisingly, from Australia. You can learn more about this in the link from the Smithsonian Institution in the description. But in essence, back in 1967, a bunch of these skulls were discovered in Australia, all of them possessing a relatively unusual long shape. These are now referred to as the cow swamp skulls. And though at first this was hypothesized to be our ancestor, Homo erectus, eventually it was confirmed that this seemed to have an artificial deformation involving a cultural skull modification similar to the Paracas.
Now, did you hear that? At first, these skulls were mistaken for natural skulls from another species of hominid, Homo erectus. And later, they were determined to be Homo sapiens sapiens skulls that were modified artificially. So, if the intention of the artificial modification was to emulate this other species of hominid, sounds like they fucking nailed it, huh? That's kind of a big deal, isn't it? And again, here we are in the Pacific, part of this whole island-copping culture that I was alluding to, I believe spread this whole practice through the region. It's no accident that it tends to hug the coastlines. I do not believe that it was started in numerous places independently. I believe that it was shared via travel throughout the seas, like the map implies.
But around the same time, in Neolithic China, people were actually doing something extremely similar. Here in the province of Jilin, near the Hutamuga site, researchers once again found extremely similar skulls, specifically 11 of them, that most likely represented the early practice linked to some kind of a social status once again.
Notice again, this is the same shape that was earlier mistaken for Homo erectus. It's also the shape of Khan Komli's skull, the Chinook sheaf I mentioned earlier. This shape seems to have been one of the more preferred shapes, and the fact that it can be mistaken for a natural skull from a different species should tell the curious researcher there is more to this story than mere cradle boarding. Should.
But what might come as a surprise to all of us is, of course, the fact that this was also practiced in Europe and even in somewhat recent times. And in this case, a lot of evidence comes from things like, for example, coins, ancient coins. Here's, for example, one of the kings of a culture referred to as the Alcons. In this case, his elongated head was extremely likely produced using a very similar modification technique.
And this resembles the Paracas skulls, the ones we would call elongated, which is something the Neanderthals had, although not nearly to the degree of the artificially modified skull. But the shape is similar, and the similarity to those across the seas becomes less easily discounted. Again, we think of the map and the distribution of these skulls, how they hug the shorelines. All of a sudden, this practice seems to be discernible. And it looks like they were trying to emulate other hominids, at least with this European Paracas conehead shape and with the Paracas North Native American Pacific Northwest Islander, what would you call that one? Like kind of the bug butt shape or a light bulb shape? I don't know. The one they mistook for Homo erectus. But that then makes me wonder about the other common deformations, like the Stewie Griffin. Was it based on another species of hominid that existed at more or less the same time as we did? Homo longi, aka Dragon Man, seems to be a pretty good fit for that, although we can safely assume we'll find other species that may fit the bill long down the road in the future. The fact of the matter is, I think you're starting to see there's a pretty good reason to at least look at the hypothesis that these weren't based on alien skulls necessarily, but other species of hominid skulls, yeah, seems like a really good place to start.
This is a description from the 1921 German Book on Anatomy. And so a lot of different depictions of different kings and different royalties from Europe and Asia, including this Iranian king, Rostam, seem to all depict an extremely similar feature that could have only been produced as a result of cranial modification.
Now, something so strange yet so ubiquitous needs to be given more deference, in my opinion. Listen to the process and how horrific it was. In his book, Astoria, Washington Irving recorded, "As the tightening of the padding and the pressing of the head to the board is gradual, the process is said to not be attended with much pain. The appearance of the infant, however, while in this state of compression, is whimsically hideous, and its little black eyes, we are told, being forced out by the tightness of the bandages, resemble those of a mouse choked in a trap. So it's not something that would be taken up lightly. But we see it over and over and over again. Even Anton points out it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere on the dang planet. People were doing it everywhere. So why? Well, again, they told us. It's to make them
harder, better, faster, stronger.
Which would align with the idea of them emulating other hominid species if they assumed that these other species had some of the traits they were looking for.
And we also obviously have actual skulls. Here's one from 5th century Hungary. Here's one a little bit to the north in Germany. And here's a bunch from Samarkand in Central Asia. All of these were actually around the same time. As a matter of fact, even Vikings, especially the ones on the island of Gotland, seem to practice this as part of the rites of passage.
So this practice is clearly widespread, clearly ancient, and clearly strange as hell to us today. But from here, Anton makes the case for it being just one example of body modification, comparing circumcision and tattooing and other stuff to the artificial cranial deformation. And in some cases, well, this could well be the case. It may just be a means of differentiating one tribe from another group of people who live nearby. But by just assuming that, he is ignoring the fact that it could well be the practice of emulation of other species of hominid. And if that's the case, then you do get to ask the fun question, what if some of these were emulating aliens? And now, personally, I don't believe that that's very likely at all. However, the same thing would apply. The best skulls, if there is a freaking alien skull out there, if Rockefeller showed up and one of those bundles had a skull with three eyeballs in it, which one do you think he took? But that brings us back to the cover-up, and then why is it so ubiquitous? Why is it spread around the world like the skulls are? Why is it that I can find information about some of these places and other places I can't? Why is it that Anton makes a video talking about it, but the Pacific Northwest of the United States, which had the highest concentration ever recorded by a white explorer, 3,000 in one place, he just missed it. He didn't even know it. Didn't even notice it. And I know a lot of people who live in this region. I live in the Pacific Northwest. I know lots of people up here who aren't aware of this. It's a well-hidden fact right under our own noses. And again, you can understand why the tribe would hide this, but you can't really understand why the historians would. And then when you start to look at the degeneration of knowledge over time, when we lose the island of Hawaii or the island of Niue, other places no longer practiced cranial deformation back in the day, according to history now, but history 100 years ago records them as having done so, that's very problematic. I feel like I need to strap on a tinfoil hat, maybe a tinfoil cup, a couple pasties, and, break out the old copy of Polybius and, contact MK Ultra and find out what the hell's going on in my universe. Was there really a freaking cornucopia on the Fruit of the Loom undies or not? At any rate, thank you so much for watching. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I hope that you learned something here, that this isn't like, you don't have to go out into aliens in order to see where people that are doing mainstream research into this kind of stuff are missing a lot of things. And it can be very easy to get dogmatic and therefore miss something that's right in front of you. Anton himself said, hey, they mistook these skulls for Homo erectus. Think maybe it's possible they were trying to emulate those? And I'm sure Anton's smart enough that he'll be like, well, yeah, okay. But he didn't catch it when he went through it originally, did he? And that's not because he's dumb. It's because of the dogma, because he was looking at it. These people were trying to do aliens? No, they weren't trying to do aliens. But at any rate, I think you get what I'm saying. I'm babbling a bit now. You want to hear me babble a whole lot more? Get your ass to Sedona, Arizona. I'll be there May 1st through 3rd. Even better than that, there's going to be a pinned comment down below that'll tell you how to get tickets through me. And the tickets that are through me are going to be at a slight discount, and you're going to be sitting in the VIP section with my happy ass, Randall Carlson, and a few other cool kids, all right? B-Y-O-B-B-B. And tinfoil pasties. Anyway, thank you so much for watching. Don't forget to go tell that Professor Dave guy he's got a debate hanging over his head. He can't keep hiding from me forever. Anyway, thanks so much for watching, and hope to see you next time.